Welcome to Canada.
Thanks. Are you speaking on behalf of all Canada?
On behalf of all Canada. Welcome to Canada.
Good Muslim. Welcome, Toronto, to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast.
Yes. We have people with us today. We're at the Aga Khan Museum. We're so excited to be here.
It is so great to be here in another Shia capital.
I feel like everyone's been arguing that it's an everything capital, too. Like, everyone I talk to is like, no, we have the biggest population of X, Y, Z. I was like, all right, fine. Take it, Toronto. So tell me about the show you're doing. You're here doing a show. What have you been up to?
Oh, my gosh. I've been workshopping my show on behalf of all Muslims, a comedy special. It's my relationship to the challenge of being asked to either speak on behalf of all Muslims or say on behalf of all Muslims that you're not speaking on behalf of all Muslims, on behalf of all Muslims. You just can't escape it as a comedian with a Muslim-ish tag of any kind.
Yeah.
And so I've been workshopping it for the last 3 years, and I have it now here at the Aga Khan Museum, and I have another show tomorrow, and every time I workshop it, I turn these stories into jokes.
Awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like a way to develop material that's not at a bar.
Yeah. And you're getting ready for your June show.
Yes. In June, I have my album recording. Yeah, it's my debut album, you guys. Thank you. If you're in the San Francisco area, come see it. If you're somewhere else in the world, plan your travel so you can come see it. I got to get 600 people there, y'all. Come out June 21st and 22nd at the Brava Theater in San Francisco. And I also was on The Moth today.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I had a
story. You can listen to it. It's a podcast.
Yeah. Moth fans in the house?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, and how about you? What you got going on, Tez?
I saw poppies.
You went to the Field of Poppies?
I did. I didn't take a nap in the poppies like in The Wizard of Oz, but I was very excited to see the poppies.
This is a controversial
thing
you did.
This is a very California conversation, too, by the way. The California poppies are in bloom right now. I know this is like an odd concept for you because it snowed 2 days ago here in Toronto, which was, I didn't have the jacket for it, so it was an experience. But in California, it's 90 degrees Fahrenheit. Which is, I don't know how many degrees Celsius. It's like times 9 divided by 5.
Divide by
times
9.
Times 1.8 or something.
Divide by 8.5.
Very hot in California. And the orange California poppies are in bloom. And the whole country, like the desert, Central Valley desert, just like covered in bright orange and yellow. And I drove out 2.5 hours to go see them. And it was gorgeous. I've always wanted to go.
It's a controversial thing.
Well, it's controversial if you, like, step off the path. So I actually went to the Antelope Valley Poppy Reserve, which is a designated park. Mm. And I paid the money for the parking lot, and I stayed on the trail.
Oh, you stayed on the trail.
I stayed on the trail. And that's, I think the controversial part is that there's a lot of people just kind of, like, driving out to the middle of nowhere and parking their cars and just jumping into the fields, which is not recommended.
Yeah, it's like it's disrupting the poppy's ability to like bloom. There
exactly.
are all these like Instagrammers.
But I went to the park. I went to the designated park, which I highly recommend people do.
So you did the good Muslim.
I did the good
Instagram.
Good Muslim thing. Yeah.
Solid. Solid. Those pictures are gorgeous.
Yeah, it's so pretty.
So we got some pretty hot topics here today, Tez.
Yeah.
You know, for a while I thought maybe nothing's going on in the Muslim world.
I know. There's always something going on.
Planet Islam, what's up? I don't know. That's my best at an air horn.
So we're in the middle of April. April 13th is today's date. And Ilhan Omar is in the news again. I feel like the Republicans are all about keeping our wonderful congresswoman in the news. And I've decided that Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a stan account for Ilhan Omar. Because as long as they keep talking about her, I think we need to keep rebutting that.
What is this? Yeah. Okay, now that we got our oxytocin in, what is a stan account?
A stan is like a fan account, but stan.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know what the S stands for in fan. The fan of the stand. It's a thing that the kids are saying, which is the only reason why I know it.
Well, I thought that those were always bad.
Well, yeah, it's just like a stalker account is where it comes
That's
from. Yeah.
But we're going to have the good
stalker. We're going to do the good stalker kind.
Good stalker.
Yeah, we're reclaiming all the words.
All the words and the stalking.
Yeah.
S-T-A-L-K-I-N-G. Stalking.
And by the time this podcast gets aired, I think this is going to be old news. But as of today.
I hope so.
We decided that she's always going to be in the news, so we're always just going to talk about her.
I mean, it feels like, and we're about to get into this, but it feels like they're going to continue this like barrage until they have her out of Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like an exhaustive attempt.
Yeah. Today, the president of the United States tweeted a video that misquoted a bunch of things that she said. And they interspersed it with videos of September 11th. And then he shared it on his Twitter, which I feel like Jack from Twitter needs to be doing something about this and taking it down. Like, if there's hate speech on Twitter, he's allegedly taking stuff down. And this is pretty hateful because it's making her get death threats.
Yeah, I don't know. That just makes me feel like we need to be off Twitter. Like,
I think the president needs to be off Twitter,
too. The president and Twitter. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The president and Twitter had a meeting. My Persian paranoia brain is at work. Thank you, one Persian in the house. It feels like a system that's preset. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It feels preset. Like, I, in terms of, like, strategizing, I'm like, let's get the fuck off Twitter until they fix this. You know what I mean? Like, why wait?
Well, because Twitter's making money off of it. And we're going to get into this a little bit later, but we just had a meeting on national... white supremacy, white nationalism, I think it's what, I don't know, white people on the internet. That was the hearing that was at Congress. Mm. And I'm going to get into that in a little bit. But that whole meeting was to talk about how white nationalism thrives on Facebook and Twitter.
Yes.
It just got skewered unchecked into being a different kind of a hearing.
Yeah,
which we'll get into in a little bit.
We talked about this on the podcast in the past. About how during Obama's presidency, even white supremacist organizations were working with some law enforcement agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the United States. There's a lot going on in the United States. How are you guys doing, Canada? What's up? A couple of groans. I heard you got a good governor going on. Like, what's that about? This week, the New York Post had a cover stating 9/11 was some people doing something, and then Trump posted a terrible video, right, that we just talked about. And they had Ilhan, like, on the cover,
mm-hmm.
right, in some of them. And then in the New York Post one, it was just her, like, quote.
Yeah.
So this is now, like, media working with digital media, working with the president,
yeah.
working with white supremacy.
Of course, yeah.
Nothing scary about that.
No, it's all related. Yeah, I think one of the things that I was thinking about a couple of weeks ago, because of all the work we do at Vigilant Love, which is this amazing organization in LA that works with the Japanese American community, the Muslim American community, and we do a lot of solidarity work. One of the organizers and I, we were talking about the process of dehumanizing people. When you dehumanize people like they did with the Japanese Americans, both in the U.S., but this also happened up here in Canada after Pearl Harbor was bombed, the dehumanizing process made it easier to round up the Japanese Americans and Japanese Canadians and send them to camps. So that's just what we're seeing now is just a part of the historical legacy of rounding up people. So we can't let it happen. We need to keep fighting back, even though this is their strategy and we know what their strategy is. We've got to keep fighting it back.
In Canada, you got to keep it out your border. Yeah, give it up. Also in the news.
Also in the news is an article that really made me mad.
Laughing because speaking of Twitter,
I don't like to get into Twitter fights, but sometimes I feel like I have to. You know how sometimes. Anyways, there was this Washington Post article that came out a couple weeks ago, and the title of it, I don't know if anyone here read it. It said, "Muslim American girls need role models, but they are hard to find." And this article, this is what I was feeling too. That side, that was it. That was what I was feeling, and. I don't know. I have a bunch. And I went back and forth with the writer of this article, who I feel like I don't want to name. But I went back and forth, and she's like, well, it's for a 9-year-old. And she didn't think any of the ones that were listed that were named were appropriate for a 9-year-old. So then I was like, well, I think I'm appropriate for a 9-year-old role model. And I think all my friends are.
Well, there you go.
So I asked it to Twitter. I was like, who do you think is appropriate to be a Muslim American female role model for a 9-year-old girl? And it just came pouring out. That tweet got so many responses. It was in the hundreds. And I was just like so validated by that process.
And people were sending so many lists, right?
So many lists. It was so beautiful to see.
And then I'm sure Twitter collected all of them and handed them over to the appropriate organization.
Yeah, Jack. At Jack.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, I love that this, like, gorgeous thing came out of it. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes the internet works like that, and it's like, ah, yes, internet, yes. So rarely get to say that. You know what I mean? Like, also, okay, we'll continue with the story, because, like, the plot thickens.
Oh, yeah. Eventually, I would say within 24 hours, the title was changed. The author went back to the Washington Post and told them that to change the title. And what's the new title?
The new title is Muslim American Girls Need to See Their Role Models Reflected in the Spotlight Too.
Right? It's a good title change.
Much better title.
I think it's so important that as freelancers, as writers, that we push back on how the mainstream wants to portray us in the media. And I think these subtle things, such as making sure that we don't get clickbaited, is so important. So, so important.
That don't get clickbaited? What do you mean?
Clickbait is the term.
I know clickbait. The reason why I asked is because I was recently in an article, just to make it about me for a second, that in Bustle Magazine that was... about apologies. And they added Louis C.K. and Kevin Hart in there. And I had a beef with that because I was like, I never talk about Kevin Hart in the piece. And they're just adding that in for clickbait.
Yeah.
Right? But my argument to them was like, because I understand the utility of clickbait is what I'm saying. But the function of having Kevin Hart in there looped it with Louis C.K., like, they're not the same kind of bad.
Totally.
At all. Yeah. At all. And it didn't make any sense, and it discredited me, and I was like, it's not going to do you the clickbait favor. You're just going to get an eye roll, and people won't click on it.
Yeah.
So, okay, so are you saying, like, no clickbaity? No, are you saying alternative clickbaity or something?
Just, I mean, you can make it a good title. Just don't support the mainstream white supremacist narrative.
That feels like a pretty solid definition to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Send that out in a style guide.
So Zara and I have made our own list of a small sampling of the many, 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 many Muslim American women out there that are good role models for 9-year-olds.
Yeah. Also, I just want to put out there, like, when I was a 9-year-old, my role models did not look like me.
Yeah.
One of them was Scrooge McDuck. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, this, like, whole notion that, like, we need to find, like, a one-for-one is doing us a disservice, I feel like, because we're not seeing, like, what it is that little girls are looking for.
Yeah.
I was starved for role models.
Completely,
and it wasn't always about who looked like me. You know what I mean? Like, the stepmother in Cinderella looked like me.
Was she a role model?
She was. And to this day, it is why I stand by dislikable women in positions of power.
Oh, just because of that movie?
Thank you. Yes, my mother has very Aryan features, and it was clear to me that cooking and cleaning, she was Cinderella, and I was the evil stepmother.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, you know what? Fine. Clean those drapes, bitch. No, it's terrible.
Took it there.
I took it there.
Hope your mom doesn't listen to this one.
And the tapestries and the draperies. But I just did them. Do them again. Then there's a garden and the hall. Clean the stairs. And of course, there's the... Okay.
Okay, so Zara, you have a 9-year-old niece.
Yeah.
Have you told her about Muslim American women that are out there?
You mean just like as there are people out in the
world?
No,
no, no. As role models, you know? Like, who do you give... Who do you let them learn about?
Like within a Wildcrats frame?
A what?
Yo Gabba Gabba? There's some version of Sailor Moon they watch.
This would be a good list to start with then.
Okay. Yeah.
I would put myself at the top of that list too. Do they know about me?
Do they know about the podcast? About role models, you guys, is it's so hard to find them. Just 30. You can be looking anywhere. They're just really difficult to find. I couldn't find any good role models for them, Taz.
Of course, just three.
Just they, like my nieces. So my sister and I have like really different views on the raising of children, and she has them and I don't. So I get to be that auntie that shows up with like secret books about like Ella Baker and like, you know, Josephine Baker and like. They are not like connected to their religious identity like I am. They're not connected to a political identity like I am. And so I'm always like feeding them stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think this list is like, we have 15 names here.
Let's do our list.
Yeah. The first one we have is Zara Bilou, who's a civil rights lawyer. She's the ED of San Francisco's care office, and she bakes and is amazing. She's a dear friend.
I feel like that would be a rad role model for little girls. Yeah. I would tell baking. My 9-year-old niece, you should know about Zara Bilou.
Yeah, civil rights baking.
Civil rights and baking. Give it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we got a list of 15 here. We got Marguerite Aziza, who is a co-founder of Muslim Anti-Racist Collective, which is working on racial justice education for the Muslim community.
Yeah, she does some amazing work with the Black Muslim community and intersectionality with the non-Black Muslim community. It's been really amazing. We also have Sana Saeed, who's the host and senior producer at AJ Plus, and she's always putting out great contents.
And she is Canadian.
She's Canadian.
What's up? We got G. Willow Wilson, writer of dystopian Muslim novels and co-creator of Marvel's first Muslim superhero, Kamala Khan.
We have Anushe Ansari, engineer and astronaut who went to the moon.
Anusha Ansari. Dancing on the moon. We got Nigel Amotman, writer and director of Jinn Movie and proponent of sharing Black Muslim narratives.
We have Fazia Mirza. She's a filmmaker. She's a dear friend. We met her actually when she also got an award from the White House, and the way I got an award from the White House. It was at the same ceremony. She actually has a movie out on Amazon Prime.
Signature Move.
Signature Move. Ha, there you go. There,
Signature Move. It's a great movie. It's on Amazon. Nagin Farsad. She's a comedian, actress, writer, and filmmaker. If I was a 9-year-old girl and I was like, are there any Iranian writer, filmmakers out there? Nagin Farsad. There she is.
She has a podcast, too, which is fantastic.
Fake the Nation. Check it out.
Najiba Saeed, who is an amazing mentor, associate professor of the interreligious education scholar. And whenever we do a protest in LA, she comes and does a prayer before we start. And it's just so amazing that she's such an activist and brings that spirituality into our activist spaces.
Maysoon Zayed, she's a comedian, writer, actor, disabilities activist, co-founder of the New York Arab American Comedy Festival. Hilarious. She's hilarious.
We have Aliyah Pabani, who you just met, artist and podcaster of the show The Imposter, and is going to be our moderator for the Q&A this evening.
Give it up! Zarin Jeffrey, founder of Salam Reads, an imprint publishing house that makes books for kids about Muslim stories.
We have Darakshan Raja, who is a hunger DJ in D.C., as well as the founder of the D.C.-based organization Justice for Muslims Collective. And they do amazing, amazing work in D.C.
Yo. So they're a DJ mm-hmm. and an activist mm-hmm. and a lawyer.
Yep. Yeah.
That's badass. Do they like EDM? I'm really into it. Hoda Kitabi is a political fashion creative and founder of JujuzAzad.com. Iranians in the house, check her out. Everyone, check her out. She's amazing. And if I was a 9-year-old girl and I had someone like her to look up to in fashion, hell yeah.
Yeah. And last but not least on our list is the awesome Linda Sarsour, who is the executive director of Empowered Change, and is always on the front line speaking out in an unapologetic Muslim. So give it up for her too. And give it up for all the people on this list.
Give it up for keeping Muslim women safe.
So I hope that's a big list to give to your 9-year-old niece.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can just swing that into a dinner table conversation.
Yeah. I'm going to turn into a coloring book for your niece.
Oh, my God. That's the thing. It's like you need to have the books, right? Yeah. Which is like why it's awesome to have Zeri and Jeffrey like doing that work.
Yeah.
So that's the in, you know what I mean?
It's like, I would love if these 15 faces were a coloring book. Like, how fun would that be?
How fun would it be to get a check from a publishing house after this podcast?
Yeah. It would be so much fun.
To do that and make that happen. Yeah. That would be so fun. All right, some not fun things. Hijab ban.
Yeah, what's going on in Montreal, y'all? I did some research on this week. That's intense.
Yeah, tell us about it.
Okay, so the research I did was, so you don't have states here, you have provinces, right? That's how you call it?
Yeah, I understand that, because when growing up, I always was told Iran is a province of Italy in Asia.
Different. Totally different. So Quebec is a province in Canada. Montreal is the city. And so there is a bill passing, Bill 21, and that's passing for all of Quebec. Is that correct? Yeah. So Bill 21 is going to say that it's going to be illegal for people who are in public roles and public jobs to wear religious garments. And this is, who's there? We need to have the conversation. This bill would affect Sikhs that are wearing turbans, nuns who are wearing habits, Jewish people that are wearing yarmulkes, and Muslim women in hijab.
Okay, so Bill 21, for or against I should be?
I don't know what the for or against is, but Bill 21 is going to make it illegal.
So I'm against that.
Yes.
Okay.
There you go.
People should wear what they fucking want.
Yes.
Thank you. I mean, when it comes to religions and how people dress, that's one way to regulate how people think and believe. No, that's categorically wrong. You can have opinions about what you think, but you don't get to go so far as to institutionally require it of other individuals. That's not okay.
So one of the things that's going to happen with this law is, from what I've been understanding of it, is that if the way they're going to enforce it is if someone is wearing hijab, like a teacher is wearing it in school, that there's going to be some sort of a hotline to call in and to say,
oh my God,
right? Is this correct? This is how I heard it. So they're going to have a hotline to call in to say, like, this person can't work here. Not just, like, you're going to have students. You're basically going to have, like, elementary school students or, you know, teenagers, whatever. You're going to have anyone just calling in. It's mind-blowing to me that this is even
Can I have something. A hotline to call in and be like, my white husband is wearing the same undershirt again? It's got yellow armpit stains, y'all. Why is he running in it? Throw it away. Pick him up. Arrest him. Do whatever you can. Cloak him, please. Take him out quietly.
The thing that I find really interesting is I've been going out and eating a lot in Toronto because there's a lot of amazing food here that I've been eating. And everywhere I've been going, there's like halal food signs and there's also like tons of people expressing their religious identity, whether hijab, whether turbans, whether yarmulkes. Like, there's just every kind of people in Toronto. So I'm just really surprised that just a little bit over, there's this Francophone state province that is trying to put this regulation on.
What does Francophone mean?
People that speak French. Which I just learned after I got here. I was like, what's Anglophone? What's allophone?
So it's not like a telephone. It's different. This is what the podcast is for. We learn things. We bridge communities.
Luckily, in Montreal, there was a protest last week that was protesting the bill. And these pictures are really powerful to see women in hijab and holding up signs. It was in CBC News. That was in French. So that's happening here. It was interesting, y'all. I hope y'all are organizing on that up here.
It's this influence is like all over the world, right?
Yeah, I feel like this influence right here is really highly connected to what's going on in France. And they're trying to like bring that kind of ideology into that province.
I think it is also connected to what happened in Christchurch.
Yeah. Since our last recording, Christchurch happened, and we put up our podcast, and I don't want to talk about it, but I feel like we have to talk about it.
I want a whole space for it. I do.
Yeah.
This felt really different, and it felt different globally. Like, I heard people saying, instead of what's happening to Muslims, I want to be an ally, I heard people saying what's happening to humanity.
Yeah. Yeah, this was the first time, or you were saying that this was the first time that you kind of saw that. I was thinking about this, and I think that like one of the things that as an organizer is that we've been trying so hard to push back on this mainstream message that says that we as Muslims are the other, that it does feel like the messaging is working, that we're saying we're not, that we need to build empathy, we need to build solidarity, that we are all one humanity, and that we are all affected when something, when a terrible tragedy happens, we are all affected. So in some ways, I feel like the message shifting is working, which is kind of, I mean, I don't want to say it's great, but it's good to see that happening.
Yeah, it's necessary.
Necessary.
It's a relief.
There you
it's
go.
It's a relief.
Yeah.
It's something we've been working towards.
Yeah.
It's a pushback against the dehumanizing force that you were talking about that is always active against people like Ilhan Omar, our congresswoman. So like when we do get that, because I think it's important, people don't actually understand what messaging is. The more and more I do this work, the more I realize people don't know what messaging means. Can you talk about it a little bit? Like it was for like a 9-year-old.
Messaging. Well, messaging is just how you talk about things. And I think messaging exists everywhere in how Muslims are being messaged, right? People are fear-mongering about Muslims. They're talking about Muslims are the enemy. Muslims are
like the stories being told about them frequently.
Yeah, that's all to dehumanize. And that dehumanizing will then lead to being able to murder, kill, marginalize
Rip people. Their hijabs off.
Yeah. Yeah, all the things.
Hate crimes.
Yeah.
Anyone who looks Muslimish.
Yeah. Messaging is so important. I mean, messaging is so important that Russians hacked into the American political system to try to control the messaging so that we got the president that we currently have.
Messaging. So I might tell my 9-year-old niece there's a rad, badass woman named Tez Ahmed.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I met your niece, too. So I'm confused as to how she doesn't know me.
Right, so when you meet her again.
Yes.
I'm going to say there's this rad poet, activist, writer, artist, friend of mine, Taz, who you've met before, who you know you're familiar with, who works on the stories that people tell about Muslims, which is a religion I believe in and is me, so that people don't see us as these negative characters and we're not dehumanized. I don't know. How do you explain dehumanizing to a 9-year-old?
No, don't say dehumanizing. There's, the other part is good. Just leave it there.
Leave it there? Okay, I got it. I nailed it. I nailed it? Yeah, I nailed it. Okay.
On that note, let's go to a break.
Okay, y'all. Let me tell you about my first bra that I ever bought. I was 12 years old, and I got teased about being flat-chested all the time. And oh yeah, we were living in Saudi Arabia. So I asked my mom, because I was the last girl in my school to get a bra, and she reluctantly agreed. So I put on my black abaya, we got our dad to drive us, since my mom wasn't allowed to drive, and we went to this little hole-in-the-wall boutique. My mom and I walked in, and this Arab man, who only spoke Arabic and refused to make eye contact with us, was pulling down bras for me from the back corner of the shop. They had no mannequins, because, you know, that's haram. And they didn't have any dressing rooms, because I guess that's haram, too. And there were no sizes on the tags, and I just had to look and decide if it would fit me. Buying from Lively is like the opposite of that experience. I went on their easy-to-navigate website, had a gorgeous range of bras to choose from, and placed my order. Just like that, the bras were delivered in this cute little box, and I could try them on in the comfort of my own home. Lively offers a range of bra styles for all different body types, available in 32A to 44DDD. Choose from bralettes, t-shirt bras, push-up bras, plunge bras, and no-wire bras. Find your new go-to pieces. At Lively, it's always one price for all. Any style, color, or size, they believe in charging one price for all women. The bras leave you feeling comfortable, confident, and part of a wider community of empowered women. They also have free and easy returns using their prepaid shipping label included in every package. For a limited time, Good Muslim Bad Muslim listeners can get $10 off your first orders by visiting wearlively.com and enter good at checkout. This is only available in the U.S. Once again, get $10 off your first order at Wear Lively. That's WEARLIVELY.com when you enter good at checkout. Enjoy.
And we're back. All right, creeping Sharia time.
Okay, my creeping Sharia is, like I've said, I've been eating a lot here. I don't know why. And there's halal food everywhere. I feel
that's why.
Yeah. I feel like halal food is the ultimate Toronto creep. I had Hakka food. I had Sri Lankan food. I had Jamaican food. I had Egyptian food. It was all very delicious.
All halal?
I think half of them were halal. Yeah. And those are all food types that we don't have in LA. So I've been trying to like eat all the foods that we don't really have access to in LA.
Nice.
Delicious.
All right. My creeping Sharia is something I'm so excited about to announce. Rami, the TV show Rami is here.
I'm so excited. We've been waiting for this for like 3 years.
Do you guys know about the show? Rami Youssef, he's a comedian. He's an Egyptian-American comedian. It is a totally bingeable show. There's going to be 10 episodes out on Hulu April 19th, 2019. So by the time this podcast is out, you can binge it. Check it out.
Zara and I got a chance to preview watch it, and it was amazing. And I think one of the things that I just loved about it was just, like Muslims aren't perfect in this TV show. They're kind of complicated characters, and I hated some people, but I also loved the same characters. And I was just like, I'm so ready to not be, like, two-dimensional.
Right?
Yeah. Or one-dimensional. One-dimensional? It's just multi-dimensional, whatever the terminology is.
It's
the
characters multi-dimensional. Yeah. There aren't token characters. This is the entire show, you know, is like a range of Muslims and different kinds of narratives and backgrounds. And it's like, oh, God, like one person doesn't have to mascot for everybody.
It's going to make it easier for our TV show.
All right. And, of course, our coloring book.
Our coloring book.
That's coming out after we get off the stage. Yeah, we're busy. Awkward Ask a Muslim. You got one? This is another one of our segments.
Yeah. Why don't you go first?
Okay. My Awkward Ask a Muslim?
Yeah.
Last night, I performed at the show, and a woman said to me, okay, so a Persian woman who kept her nose. I love comedy. I wore my Prada shoes. Great work tonight. But I actually really liked it. It actually made me really happy. Because I can never talk about my nose.
Really?
Yeah.
You should do a whole show about it.
Good nose, bad nose. a lot of Persian women get their noses done.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like a sign of affluence. And sometimes I get scowled at by other Persian women who are like, you know, my mom's age or older than me, my elders.
Yeah.
Who feel that I'm not living up to the work of a model minority.
Right.
You're not trying. And there's this sort of Aryan narrative. Mm-hmm. Not sort of. There is an Aryan narrative. Iran is Aryan.
Yeah.
Right. I remember one auntie, we say khale, but auntie, that said to me once that getting your nose reshaped is connecting you back to your original Aryan roots.
No! Oh!
How fucking warped is that shit?
That's terrible.
That's like a Time Lord, time travel, like what? Doctor Who episode of warped narrative messaging shit. You know what I mean? Like, whoa. What happened, Auntie?
That should be what the story's about. This time machine nose narrative. You know, dystopian past meets future. Boom. Wait, did she say it in a like positive? Like, what was the tone in her voice?
It was positive.
Okay. Then that's that's different than like negative.
No, yeah. It wasn't a backhanded compliment, you know, which is like how it can sound, you know what I mean? But it was so real, and she just said it in front of everyone. It was just kind of like badass. I was like, whoa, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's really hard because I understand, like, this knows. One of my friends told me it makes you queer, which is interesting. You know what I mean? Because hear me out. Like, there's something about my patrician nose that is resemblant of my father.
Mm-hmm.
It's very masculine about me.
Okay.
And makes me just a little less femme. And there are guys out there who I can feel when they come across me, because I'm also a tall woman. I'm like 5'9 and a pair of heels. I'm taller than most of y'all. And I sometimes can feel men's homophobia at me.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. You know what I mean? And I've gone back and forth. Like, I have a deviated septum. I can have surgery. And I've gone back and forth. And I've never talked about this. Never. Because I'm like, what if I do get my nose? And then I don't want to have to have this conversation. But then I realized, looking back on my 9-year-old self, do you know how hard I looked for other girls with noses like mine? I look so hard.
Aww.
I look so hard.
You only found the stepmother in Cinderella.
I loved her so much. So, you know, I love you, Prada lady. Thank you.
My awkward ask is related to taking lifts, because I've been traveling a lot, and I was in Portland. And for folks that aren't familiar with Portland, it's in Oregon and the States, and it's used to be like a white supremacist state, because they used to have all these laws that prevented prevented people of color from coming into the state. So the state of Oregon thinks of itself as very liberal, but it's also because they have these like really archaic laws that go back hundreds and hundreds.
It's really funny to
hear
you explain Portland to Canadians.
I know. I was like, I feel like I wouldn't be explaining all this if I wasn't in Canada. So all that being said, is they have a unique flavor of racism in Portland. So usually when I'm in a Lyft and people ask me, they see my name, which is Tanzila, and they see my name, they say, where are you from, right? That's like the usual normal microaggression. In Portland, my driver said, he asked me if my name was real.
What?
He's like, oh, your name's unique. Is it real? I was like, why would I have a fake name that's Tanzil? I was like, I'm really confused by this.
I have so many questions, but go on.
So that was one conversation. The one that I wanted to talk about is my, because that wasn't the awkward ask.
Oh my God. Like, okay, if you're already in a cab with a guy who's like, you know, girls are always giving me fake names. It's already a bad situation. All right, go on.
Do you know what I ended up doing? I asked him what his name was and where it was from. And then he started talking about Austin and how it came from his grandfather. And I got this whole history of the word Austin. I was like, I don't care about your name. The awkward ask that I got in another Lyft ride.
Oh, boy.
Was, I think I mentioned, he's like, he asked about the, I said something and I was like, oh, yeah, I have a podcast called Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. And I'm talking to my friend on the phone, or I'm texting her or something. And then he goes, okay, I have the quote. He says, I've been researching Muslim menswear. I was like, what? What does that mean? And so I said, why would you? Because that's a good response. And in the meantime, I texted my friend. I was like, hold up. I got my awkward ask for the month. BRB. And he said that he'd like to wear skirts and dresses, and he was looking for man dresses. And I was like, man dresses. I was like, do you mean like thobes and caftans? He's like, I don't know what they're called, but I just like wearing dresses. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is like, what is this conversation that's happening? And then I he wrote down caftans and thobes and lungis. I mean, cause like, which are all like skirtish things. I don't know. I've been thinking about this whole like conversation about like men that wear dresses, because of this conversation, I guess. But like it's so arbitrary, because no matter where you go in the world, like there are different versions of clothing.
I mean, you were literally caught in a moment where he was like planning his appropriation.
Yes. I was like, do
awkward.
Do I show him the Etsy website or do I not?
That's awkward.
So that was awkward. Mm.
What ended up happening?
I got off the lift. The lift ride ended. I was like, bye. And maybe he's going to listen to this podcast now and realize it was wrong. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Oh, man. Yeah, people don't seem to understand appropriation.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, why is gratitude when you take something? That's weird, right?
It's, yeah.
It's all right. I hear white people learning.
Yeah. But Portland. Portland does that. It's Portland.
All right, it's my favorite part of the show. It's fatwa time.
Okay.
I got a fatwa.
Yeah.
But I want to hear yours first.
Okay, my fatwa is against the use of anti-white nationalism moments to continue to push for a white nationalism agenda. Specifically, I want to talk about how the Democrats had a hearing last week, and it was with the House Judiciary Committee in the States. I feel like everything I have to say is like, we're in Canada, so I have to like say like, oh, in the U.S., this is how we do things. Anyways, they had this hearing about white nationalism and technology. And it was just so sad to watch this thing, because yes, we need to talk about white nationalism. We need to talk about how it's bad. We need to talk about how it's been internationalized. And Mohammed Abu Salah spoke at the hearing, and he is the father of the two daughters in the man that was murdered in North Carolina back in 2015 in the parking lot, over a parking lot dispute. They were execution shot in their living room. And so he was brought to speak about how white nationalism killed his family. And so he's up there and he's talking about his experience, and instead he's being asked about why is Islam a violent religion? Did he teach violence to his kids? He's being asked, by the very fact of being Muslim, are you filling your children and those in the mosque with hatefulness? So it all of a sudden becomes this conversation on Islamophobia that's attacking him.
In Congress,
when we're supposed to be talking about white supremacy.
And a hate crime that happened.
And he's the victim of a hate crime that happened. It broke my heart. I wrote journals about it. It's so terrible. So that's my fatwa. Don't take these opportunities, which we're going to see more and more of, where we're trying to dismantle white supremacy and white nationalism and then use it to uphold white nationalism. And why weren't the Democrats, why didn't they have like stronger backs to fight back on this? Fatwa all of that.
Ugh, barf. That shit's terrifying.
Yeah.
In our Congress.
What's your fatwa?
So there are positive fatwas.
Yeah.
Right? So there are positive. A fatwa is just an amendment. It could be positive or negative. Right now I'm feeling build a boat. But so I'm just like so scared. Okay. My fatwa is calling Aryan features beautiful by default.
Oh, so you get this?
Yeah.
I've never get this. So this isn't something I hear. So tell me more. Tell me about your experience.
Well, no, just even like when people like talk about other people and are like, oh, he's hot, you know, and you're like, oh, he's hot. And they're like, yeah, like hot, hot. Do you know what I mean? Or they'll be like, oh, she's beautiful. You know, just like everyone would find her beautiful.
Mm.
There's like a code language.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When people see white people and they're like, that's hot. And then they see other races and they're like,
that's not hot. Ethnic is not hot.
But then they don't say that it's not hot, like specifically because they don't want to come off as racist.
Well, and I think a lot of people internalize it and don't have it in them.
Implicit bias, yeah.
Yeah, like for me, like when I see my profile, I'm like, oh, that's not a good looking picture of me. That's an ugly photo of me. I don't like it. You know what
Wrong,
I mean?
But okay.
Right. Well, thank you. Hmm. It's a hot photo. Mm-hmm. Like I'm tired of hearing that code language just kind of being taken and accepted. You know, when people are like, but is she like pretty, pretty? You know, it's like, but she's like, you know, She's just like beautiful to everybody. She's like TV pretty. She's like, you know what I mean? It's like, just say it's Aryan features. They're Aryan features that you're looking for. You know what I mean? It's driving me nuts. So instead, just say she's Nazi pretty.
Oh. Nazi pretty.
She's Nazi pretty. He's Nazi handsome. They're Nazi handsome. They're Nazi pretty.
And everyone else is just like,
you are Nazi hot.
I like it. I'm going to use that.
Yeah. Nazi pretty.
I'm swiping on Tinder. Nazi pretty. Good Muslim Award.
Time to give out Good Muslim Awards.
Okay, mine. How many of you have seen this powerful image of a Sudanese woman wearing a white thobe, standing on the white car, chanting, big, gorgeous moon earrings? Oh my gosh, such a powerful image. And there's been art made about her. There is an uprising happening in Sudan right now, and 60 to 70% of the people out there protesting are women. And this image just went viral a couple weeks ago, and it was so powerful. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Yeah. So beautiful. And our activist friend, I'm going to give it to two people. So I'm going to give it to Ala Sala, who is the woman that was standing on the car. But I'm also going to give it to our friend Hind Mackey, who is an activist based out of Chicago, who kind of like explained why the image was powerful. And she said the image was powerful because the woman in the picture is wearing an outfit that's usually worn by working women in offices.
Oh.
And so it symbolically represents women who are city professionals. Her earrings are gold moons, which is traditional bridal jewelry. And the outfit is a callback to women who back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s dressed like that in protest against previous military dictatorships.
Holy shit.
The Sudanese are referring to the protesters as Kandaka, which is a title given to a Nubian queen. And I thought that her tweet was so deep. I was like, wow, I didn't know. Like, I knew it was powerful, but then now, so powerful.
That's badass.
And for me, I was thinking about when she was talking about how they were wearing white, I was thinking about how when Bangladesh gained its independence, there were all these pictures of Bangladeshi women wearing white saris, and they were the ones that were protesting and taking over the streets. So in my head, I built solidarity between those two struggles.
Speaking of Muslim women who your 9-year-old can look up to, Hind Mackey.
Yeah, Hind Mackey.
Yeah.
She's on the list.
My Good Muslim Award goes out to Sahar Ballou from the Aga Khan Museum's PR team. Yay. Give it up. She's being a good Muslim right now. She's at the mosque for her daughters, and I wanted to send her some love, thanks, and shine because messaging and managing PR is like really challenging with my show's title.
Yeah.
On behalf of all Muslims.
Yeah. So and what did she do?
She's been helping me work on a positive frame for it. You know, because it was something that I hadn't thought about that I sort of realized in conversation with her is that like when press likes to take my title, they like to say speaking on behalf of all Muslims is Zahra Noorbakhsh. And they see it as a positive thing. To me, it's a negative thing. To me, as a Muslim, I find it alienating to hear anybody take it that way and do that. But they see it as a sort of like positive reclamation. And I'm like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I'm responding to an interrogation.
Yeah.
And so she was like dialoguing with me through, you know, like, oh, interrogation registers in people's minds as negative and they're looking for something positive. And I was like, whoa, this is the most nuanced conversation I've had with a publicist about this title.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Good. Someone who's good at their job.
Thank you. And fortunately, I have the support of like Rethink Media, Firdaus Arasu, helping me also like frame this title. But traveling the show, you know, you only have like moments, you know, if that, with the organization's PR. And I just so valued and appreciated that Aga Khan Museum gave me more time with the publicist, yeah. Sahar, to do that and to be nuanced and hold space to complicate narrative. That's amazing.
And speaking of giving thanks to the Aga Khan Museum, thank you to everyone who helped us get here. Do you have some names for us?
Yes, I do. Please give it up as I share these thanks. Thank you to the team at the Aga Khan Museum, Charity Chan, Margot Booth, Sahar Ballou, Aman Vellani, Claire Heidinger. We've got our tech team. Glenn, give it up to Glenn. Tayoa, Felicity, Amir, and of course, Amir Ali, give it up. And thank you to our beautiful audience in Toronto. You guys have been rad. Thank you.
Before we go, Zahra, do you have anything coming up?
Yes, I do. You guys can keep an ear out for a Peace of Mind that will be out on NPR's Fresh Air. I have a new essay that's coming out about my experience of being in surgery. And I have a piece out with a moth that you guys can check out. And my show, of course, is continuing to tour. If you would like to bring it to your town, your organization, then contact me. Hit me up on my contact form. What you got, Taz?
I think I'm just getting ready for Ramadan. I think that's around the corner.
Oh, is it Ramadan time?
I think I'm just going to be eating a lot to be ready to not eat a lot.
Stock up on the halal.
But you can follow me at Tazzy Star, and if I do have things coming up, that's where you'll find me.
All right. Thank you all. Good night.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Nurbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at Tazzy Star. That's T-A-Z-Z-Y-S-T-A-R. And Zara at Zara Comedy. That's Z-A-H-R-A Comedy. You can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Special thanks to our guest producer for this episode, Marvin Yu. Thanks, Marvin. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community.
Holy Potluck. Potluck.
Hi, I'm Marvin.
And I'm Rira.
We're the host of Books and Boba, a book club and podcast dedicated to books by Asian and Asian American authors.
Every month, we pick a book by an Asian author to read and discuss on the show.
We read a wide variety of genres, from contemporary to historical fiction, fantasy to memoirs, and crime thrillers to romance.
Some of our past book club picks are Pachinko by Minjin Lee, Sorcerer to the Crown by Zen Cho, and Devotion of Suspect X by Keigo Higashino.
We also go over what's new in the Asian American literary world and chat with some talented Asian authors about their work.
So whether you want to start reading for fun again or diversify your TBR list, we got your Asian literature cravings covered. For more info, check out our website at booksandboba.com. You can listen to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and wherever you find your podcasts.
Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.